And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast, getting ready for week 10 of college football. My name is Josh Parcell. I got Rossi Three Stacks coming on in just a couple of minutes. But first off, just want to again say thank you for listening and downloading the podcast all season long. We have a huge announcement coming up on Monday. Next Monday, we'll have some very special news to share with you guys. Cannot wait to get that out there. So make sure you guys are tuning in Monday. Podcast will drop Monday morning around 8 o'clock, and we're going to have some very cool news right off the top of that. It's been a fun couple of weeks here on the podcast. As many of you guys know, I've left WFNZ at the radio station in Charlotte. We're doing a lot more with College Football Country, and I cannot wait for what is next. So tune in Monday for a very special announcement. Other than that, make sure you are downloading, subscribing, spreading the word. Tell your friends about the podcast. Tell them about DraftKings and CraftKings. Tell them about Buy the Boat. Tell them about all the good stuff that we're doing on the pod. And make sure you guys tune in Monday. All right, let's get to it. Big weekend on tap. We've got, of course, Buy the Boat. Of course, we've got DraftKings and CraftKings like we always do. We're going to talk about a very scary situation right off the bat in college football. A little bit of a weird week with a lot of games getting shut down. But we're also going to talk playoff scenarios today. What are the most likely outcomes for the college football playoff as we approach the final month of the season? All right, that's going to do it for now. Let's get to it. This week's podcast with Rossi Three Stacks.
You are looking live at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta.
No, they didn't. Oh, my gracious.
Yep.
How about that?
Lawrence took a peek downfield, had a lot of room, and breaks the tackle, and is still running. Lawrence in a foot race. Will they catch him? Touchdown, Tigers. Wow.
Well, he has trouble with the snap.
All right, so why do you continually try to get me to say something I'm not going to? So quit asking.
Well, Rossi, it's not week one anymore. I honestly don't even know what week it is. We've had so many week ones. The joke is over. We're on to week two. You know, you make the biggest improvement from week one to week two. So I'm expecting a big weekend this Saturday.
Huge weekend. And I say, Josh, I love that we've gone back to two podcasts a week, because I think we're going to see a big improvement from episode one to episode two just in this week. So a lot of positive momentum heading into this weekend. Josh, in a much more real sense, this college football season now has a lot of negative momentum heading into this weekend.
It does. And full disclosure, we're taping this on a Thursday morning. We were hoping to tape it on Wednesday. And some technical issues kind of got in the way. No matter how hard we tried, we just couldn't pull the podcast off, which kind of feels appropriate for what's going on right now in college football.
It sure does.
Yeah, we got a lot of games really getting canceled.
Appropriate that one of our spread option matchups was Ohio State, Maryland, and Alabama, LSU. Josh, the only thing that spread was COVID in those locker rooms.
It's not great.
No. Not great, Bob.
No. A lot of big games this weekend off the plate. If you're keeping score at home, yeah, Ohio State, Maryland, that one's canceled. Alabama, LSU, postponed. Georgia, Missouri, postponed. Texas A&M, Tennessee, postponed. Auburn, Mississippi State. And, oh, by the way, Sam Pittman, the head coach at Arkansas, which they have a big game this weekend against Florida, he's tested positive, so he's not going to be coaching unless he has the Nick Saban three back-to-back-to-back Tom Emanski negative tests before Saturday's game. So we got a lot of, like you said, kind of a tidal wave of bad news in college football this weekend. But do you buy into – there's a lot of conspiracy theories. Do you buy into the conspiracy that this is all it's not a coincidence that this is 2 weeks after Halloween?
I do not buy it. Wait, I do not think it is a
coincidence. Oh, you don't think it's a coincidence?
I do not think it's a coincidence.
Okay.
I do not. No, I think, I mean, without getting too far into that, we've seen similar kind of things around other holidays. I do not think it is a huge leap to say that maybe some young men in the 18 to 22 demographic were enjoying themselves on a Halloween weekend. I don't blame them, but it is not terribly... It's not a huge leap in my mind to think that that's the case.
It might be. My thing with that, because it's such a, everyone's pointed that, like, oh, Halloween, oh, it was 2 weeks ago, all right, you know what that means. I'm like, do we really think that college football players spent the first 2 months of the season behaving, and then all of a sudden they were like, you know what, I really want to dress up like a clown on Saturday night and go out, and like, that was the straw that broke the camel's back? I have a hard time believing that these kids were anti-party for 2 months, and then all of a sudden it was Halloween. I mean, understand some of those college girls sometimes will, they're, you know how college boys think sometimes, and they got to be at those parties. But other than that, I have a hard time believing that those guys were really resisting the temptation to go out to a kegger until all of a sudden Halloween rolled around. That's just me.
What they should have done is done what Mark Richt did and wait 9 days after Halloween and then
their
Trevor Lawrence costume, which was a great costume, but it's hilarious. It's middle of November. Happy Halloween for Mark Richt.
I didn't understand that at all, but shout out to Mark Richt for just out of nowhere. Yeah, it was a great costume. It looked good. He had the 16 headband and everything.
Yep. No, it was objectively good, but maybe that's what everybody else should have done. If Mark Richt were still coaching, then his fellows would have been celebrating Halloween the right way a week later. But no, I don't know, man. We can, you know, neither of us are epidemiologists, although everybody feels like we are at this point, but it's the thing that we have all kind of ignored now that, like, sports have been back, and obviously the election took everybody's attention. Like, it's not on these kids. I mean, cases are up everywhere.
Right.
And people forget they're kind of at an all-time high right now, which people thought months ago might be the case this fall. So I don't want to blame kids. And you're right. While I do think maybe there's some correlation to Halloween, I think more likely it's just this is kind of the deal now in the country, right? And so it's just going to be harder and harder to protect, you know, these college campuses, just like it's harder and harder to protect everywhere else right now. So nothing against any of these kids or Sam Pittman or whomever, but hopefully, you know, this was kind of like one big spike. We can get the thing back on the tracks, but for the rest of the year, but who knows, dude, at this point, honestly, just giant shrug emoji on everything from here out.
No doubt. Speaking of conspiracy theories, we've got to bring this up that Reddit, our friends over at Reddit brought up on at Reddit CFB on Twitter, this incredible conspiracy theory. So Ohio State, Maryland is canceled now. Now, Reddit looks into this and says, don't look now, but because of that Ohio State, Maryland cancellation, Indiana could keep sole possession of first place in the Big Ten East if they beat Michigan State on Saturday. So they win. This is how they laid it out. This was very thorough. And I credit to Reddit for going.
As Reddit tends to be.
Right, yeah, exactly. Right, spot on. Indiana beats Michigan State. Then Indiana claims possible COVID issues, cancels the Ohio State game next weekend out of safety precautions. And then Indiana magically recovers and then goes on to beat Maryland, Wisconsin, and Purdue. And then an undefeated Indiana plays Northwestern for the Big Ten title game. Now, the hard part in this is Indiana beating Wisconsin. That feels like the biggest leap. But every other part of this is fairly plausible. Would you put it past Indiana or any other school that was in this situation to say, like, all right, we're undefeated, we're going to play Ohio State, we all know what's going to happen. Guys, you know what? Contact tracing. You know what? We're not going to be able to play this weekend.
I would not put it past anybody. That is a fascinating theory. Ohio State is not going to play a single game the rest of this year. Sorry, fellas, can't make the trip.
I mean, you have to wonder. It might be what happened with Maryland this weekend. Maryland's playing pretty well. They don't want to get, you know, their face beat in. You know, Talia Tagovailoa is balling out. You know, you never know. A game like this could kind of rock the boat. All right. So, in all seriousness, there was like 8 positive tests at Maryland, allegedly. Yeah. So, we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. But I love the conspiracy theory that teams could just start, like, using contact tracing as, like, a competitive advantage. That would be the most college football way this season could end.
Correct. If anybody can figure out how to turn a global pandemic into a slight competitive advantage, potentially for recruiting, it's college football coaches.
Absolutely. Although this doesn't feel like an Indiana thing. If this was like, let's say, like Tennessee would absolutely do this. Like, let's say Tennessee was in first place in the SEC East, which, all right, I guess it's 2002 again. But if they're in first place in the SEC East and like they have Alabama this weekend, that's the kind of school, like, this is an SEC thing. I don't know if Indiana cares enough to do it.
No, I don't think so either, but I love that. Great theory.
All right, so the inevitable question from this, with all of these games getting postponed and December 19th being the drop-dead date, we've already seen the SEC, you know, their conference championships the 19th. The ACC has officially pushed theirs to the 19th. It feels like that's the last possible day to get these in because the college football playoff is right now set for New Year's Day. Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl are on the 1st. The national championship is on the 11th in Miami. So far, they have shown no interest, at least publicly, in pushing these games back, which Ross, we're in the middle of a rain delay, but we should be watching the first round of the Masters on November 12th. I feel like we can throw tradition out the window right now and maybe try to be more accommodating of a global pandemic to try to finish a season. I think that we're getting very, very close to the point where I don't know if they're going to have a choice. I think they're going to have to move these games back, which opens up a lot of I don't know if questions is the right word, but there's just a lot of difficulties in moving them. I get it. You don't want to compete with the NFL. You also just don't want to drag the season out any longer than you would have to, right? I mean, there's a lot of questions about, you know, how feasible this would be. But if you're moving these games back a week or back 10 days, move the national championship back to the week in between the conference championships in the NFL and the Super Bowl, I just feel like that has to be something that we explore. It's kind of wild to me that they haven't been more open to that because it's putting these conferences in a tough spot. These conferences can't push their season back any further because it'll interfere with the playoff. They have no choice. I think the playoff needs to step up.
Yeah, it has to come from the top down. You have to move the end goal, the end of the season back so that everybody else has more breathing room in the middle. You're exactly right about that. So I would say in terms of moving games this year, like one of the issues I would think with moving semifinals and the national championship historically is like just the logistics involved in getting like that city ready with like hotel rooms, that kind of stuff, right? You're dealing with just basic infrastructure stuff. Like that's not an issue this year. No. Nobody's going anywhere.
Right.
You're not dealing with like packed hotels and flights and all this stuff. Like you can kind of go wherever, whenever, if you need to. Certainly the teams can. It's not like you're having to pack hundreds of thousands of fans and support staff and everything into the city. So, yeah, I think they should move it back. It'd be cool, and this would be pushing it way back, if the national championship game were the day after the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Super Bowl Sunday, championship Monday. Just get it all. Well, first of all, that goes back to a whole separate discussion that the Super Bowl should be on Saturday, but maybe national championship Saturday, then Super Bowl Sunday. That would be an awesome weekend.
I was thinking that. Like, that would be even better.
Yeah, scratch my initial plan. That makes way more sense.
Yeah.
That would be a weekend full of championship football. Oh. Also, quick sidebar, Josh. As it stands now, well, the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl are on January 1st, which is a Friday. Christmas and New Year's Day being on a Friday is by far, in a way, the best day that those days can fall. I would like to do, maybe one day I will do a full power rankings of days of the week for Christmas to fall on. But Friday's number one by far. Because everybody's going to be off. You're off on Christmas Eve on Thursday.
Right.
You get Christmas on Friday, and then immediately 2 days after that, off, Saturday, Sunday. Built-in four-day weekend. Most people probably go ahead and take Wednesday off anyway. Just the best. Absolutely the best day for it to fall on. So that's just my little sidebar.
Well, you basically get 2 4-day weekends in the span of a month because Thanksgiving, you get Thursday, Friday. So you get, 4-day weekends a month apart. Yeah. I mean, I think that's clearly number one. But also, the worst would have to be either Wednesday or Monday. Because Monday, Christmas Eve is on a weekend, right? I guess maybe Sunday would be the worst. Monday or Sunday?
Sunday, I think, is the worst because it's just the normal weekend. Yep.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, you have your Saturday, Sunday of Eve and day for New Year's and Christmas.
Yeah.
And then you're just kind of expected. Like, January 2nd is the worst work day of the entire year.
Right.
And if that was also on a Monday, like, I think it was this year. Anyway, which would not surprise me with 2020 being what it was. We should have known that was the deal.
That was a giveaway.
Anyway, for another day, Josh, we'll power rank the days of the week. It'll be an electric segment. We'll do a fantasy draft 1 through 7 of days of the week for Christmas to fall on.
I'm in. All right, well, speaking of the college football playoff, Ross, this is what we wanted to get to today. And, I mean, look, with every it feels like every other game getting postponed. Obviously, a lot can change. There's the inevitable caveat we have to give before we get into this. But I think that as it stands right now, I think there are three, we'll call them plausible, but like the three most realistic scenarios for how the playoff is going to look. Now, obviously, a lot of this can change with cancellations, but if we just assume that the season pretty much goes off without any major, major shakeups with the top teams and their schedule, I think there are three scenarios that we're looking at for the playoff. Let's run through them. We'll go through them least likely to most likely. I'll kind of run through what will happen, and then you and I will kind of pick, you know, who we think would get in those scenarios. Yep. So if we just look at it right now, before we get into the scenarios, you've got Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Notre Dame, Texas A&M. Those teams are in the mix. Oregon is still in the mix. Florida, of course, with their win over Georgia, firmly in the mix. BYU, Cincinnati, undefeated, kind of hanging out there. Georgia probably feels like they're out of it. Wisconsin, who the hell knows? I guess they're still in this thing, but they literally can't miss another game. USC, technically still in it, as a team in the Pac-12, hasn't lost. They're 1-0. Oklahoma State kind of hanging around there, but they've got some tough games coming up. So there's about 12 teams that right now, honestly, I could throw Miami in there too. Crazier things have happened. Sure. There are about 12 or 13 teams that feel like maybe we got a chance to get into this thing. But if we look at the scenarios most likely, the list gets a lot smaller. Here's the first one. This is the one that I think is the least likely in collection. Unbeaten Alabama wins the SEC, which is obviously likely. These are just of the most likely scenarios, the least likely. Unbeaten Alabama wins the SEC. Notre Dame runs the table and beats Clemson again in the ACC championship, so they're undefeated. Ohio State, undefeated, wins the Big Ten. The reason I think this is the least likely of the three, you'll see coming up in a moment, is Notre Dame winning again against Clemson. Yeah. That's the one that's going to throw this, right? So if you have undefeated Alabama, undefeated Notre Dame, undefeated Ohio State, those three teams are in, like, period. That's no question. But then you could have a fourth spot where you're trying to decide between ultimately potentially an undefeated Oregon, who's a Pac-12 champion, a one-loss Texas A&M, and an undefeated BYU and or Cincinnati. You could have all of those. You could have potentially three undefeated teams, Oregon, BYU, Cincinnati, and then Texas A&M with one loss. It feels to me in this scenario that it would be Oregon that would get in, because A&M, that their calling card right now is their win over Florida. But if Florida doesn't win the SEC, I don't think that's going to be enough to lift A&M over an undefeated team, even in the Pac-12. But A&M will have a better win than anything Oregon would have. I mean, Oregon is not going to have a strong quality win other than maybe USC in the Pac-12 championship game, and we don't even know how good USC is going to be. I don't think it's enough BYU and Cincinnati, as much as I like them. I'm just going to tell you right now, I don't think they're getting in hardly any scenario. But if it came down to undefeated Oregon with maybe one win over a ranked team, versus Texas A&M, which might have two or three, where would you lean here?
So we talked about this earlier this week. Oregon needs to win convincingly in all their games to cement this case, right? And if they do that, the committee has said time and time again that they are going to favor conference champions whenever possible. So obviously this is a super weird year, but this would give them an opportunity to kind of confirm that. They're going to favor their conference champion, in this case, an Oregon, if they are undefeated, like, give them the benefit of the doubt, put them in the four spot, make them go play Alabama or Notre Dame, maybe. The thing about BYU and Cincinnati, which applies to this scenario and really all of them, I think it is a lot more likely for either of them to make the playoff if the other one loses a game. My reason for that, I don't know how you choose between them, and I think it was easy for the committee to be like, well, we're just not going to let either of them in. We're going to stick with the Power Five. I think it's a lot harder to leave one of them out. So if Cincinnati probably would, with the better case, even though BYU might be a better team, if Cincinnati just has a chance at some better wins, if they run the table, if they're undefeated with some decent wins on the schedule there, and BYU's out of the picture, then it gets really interesting with Cincinnati versus an Oregon, where I think it's easier to group the two of them together and just leave them both out.
That's very interesting. That's actually a great point, because – you remember 2014, the first year of the playoff, you had TCU and Baylor, who tied for the Big 12 championship. They got leapfrogged by Ohio State. Now, Obviously, part of that was Ohio State just they won 59-7 in the Big Ten championship game, and it was such an emphatic win that maybe they deserved it. But there was a real debate to be had there, and I think part of what worked against those two teams in the Big 12 was that you didn't know which one to pick. I mean, I forget who won head-to-head that year. It was a classic game, but regardless, you had two teams that basically split the championship. The Big 12 didn't just crown a winner. And it's the same principle right here. I honestly, that's a great point. You probably want one of those two teams to lose if you're rooting for a group of five team to have a chance.
Yep. There needs to be a clear group of five team. Otherwise, I think it's just human nature. You'd just rather not make a decision. Just go with something else. Defend your other point instead of having to make a tough decision.
Yeah, for sure. And I think where this is going to get really messy, and look, the Pac-12 SEC battle has – we've seen this before – where, you know, an at-large SEC team could get in over the Pac-12 champion, Oregon could run the table. And if USC doesn't also run the table, you're talking about likely zero wins over ranked teams, where Oregon's best win might be over Washington. I don't know. I mean, there's nobody on their schedule that's impressive. They're not going to have a quality win, whereas Texas A&M will have the win. Even if Florida loses to Bama, that's still going to be, you would think, a top 10 win for A&M. They're going to play Auburn later in the year. I don't know if Auburn's going to be ranked by that point, but maybe. And you never know with Arkansas. Arkansas is playing well enough right now where they may sneak into the ranking. So they would have the Florida win, which is far and away better than anything Oregon has, and their only loss would be to Alabama. You have to ultimately ask yourself in that situation, how would Oregon have fared against Alabama? What do you think Oregon would have done in that same situation? I try to think of it that way myself. I don't want to penalize A&M for playing the best team in America, or one of the best teams in America, when Oregon, you know, skirts by without playing anyone close to that, and yet now all of a sudden they're going to get the nod just because they're undefeated. I think that's I would ultimately think the committee goes with Oregon. If it was me, I would probably take Texas A&M, but that would really upset a lot of people who think the SEC already gets you know, too much love. Let's go to the next scenario. This one I think is honestly, like, pretty possible. This is the somewhat likely scenario. One loss, Florida runs the table the rest of the way and beats Alabama in the SEC championship. If Kyle Pitts is healthy, I can't bet against Florida, at least to make that a game against Alabama. So let's say they beat him. One loss, Clemson wins the ACC, avenges the loss to Notre Dame. They're healthy again. They beat the Irish. Clemson's back. Wins the ACC. Ohio State wins the Big Ten. That one feels like the easiest one. So undefeated Ohio State wins the Big Ten. At that point, now you could decide who you would rank where, but I would have it Ohio State 1 as the only undefeated Power 5 team, not counting maybe the Pac-12, but an undefeated team. Clemson would be my number 2, and then Florida would be my number 3. You could flip-flop those, whatever. But those top 3.
They're going to play each other anyway.
Right. The fourth spot would be between one loss Alabama, only loss being to Florida, one loss Notre Dame, only loss being to Clemson, a team they also beat, one loss A&M, who would now have the best win, arguably, in America with that win over Florida. And this is where the Clemson – well, hold on, we'll get to this in a second. Undefeated Oregon, undefeated BYU, and Cincinnati. Those are all those teams. Here's where the ranking of Clemson and Florida could matter. Is if you're deciding who to get that number 4 spot to, you would have Notre Dame and A&M both with one loss, and then you would almost, as a tiebreaker, I feel like, have to decide which of their wins was better. Was the A&M win over Florida better than Notre Dame's win over Clemson? Does that make sense?
It does.
That's where I think that gets really, really interesting. It doesn't matter who's 2 and who's 3 because they're going to play one another. But if you're trying to tie break Notre Dame, whose only loss at that point would be to Clemson, and Alabama's only loss would be to Florida, you'd both have elite losses. And then, but on the same token, you would have, you know, A&M trying to debate between Notre Dame who had the better win. It's fascinating. Meanwhile, Alabama has the head-to-head win over A&M. So if you put A&M in, then Alabama's going to have a gripe. This is the most complicated one. Trying to decide between one loss Bama, one loss Notre Dame, one loss A&M. Oh, by the way, Oregon could still, in this case, be undefeated in the Pac-12 to bring back that same scenario we were already talking about. I don't think there's any way Oregon gets in this situation. To me, I would give it to Notre Dame because I would rank Clemson 2 over Florida. But boy, is that close. And if you had Florida 2, I don't know what you do. Because I would lean A&M, but A&M lost to Alabama. That is the nightmare scenario, I think.
That is a nightmare scenario. So that a lot of that comes down to how these games actually go down. How does the Notre Dame Clemson game look? If Clemson comes out like I think will happen and beats Notre Dame by 3 touchdowns, I think the committee says, well, okay, they only won that game because Trevor Lawrence was out and all those other guys were out. Like, they're clearly not in the same caliber here, and they didn't really beat anybody else. In that case, I think it actually goes to Alabama as a team who made the SEC championship and presumably loses a close game to a Florida team that's, you know, super hot and playing as well as anybody in the country. That's where I think it would go. But Lord knows. That's where maybe the committee would just choose, we'll just put Cincinnati in so we don't have to choose between the other three.
I mean, that would be the time where an 8-team playoff would make the most sense, because you would have
100%
no
put all of them in
to know who the number 4 team should be. I think that'd be if they put Alabama in. I mean, all due respect to Notre Dame, great win last week, that's awesome. I think Alabama's the better team. If you put Ohio State versus Alabama in a semi, Clemson versus Florida in the others, incredible semis. Yeah, absolutely incredible. Semis. Great matchup. But I do think that there is our number 3 scenario is the one that's the most likely. I think this is what's going to happen. I think there's going to be an undefeated Alabama that wins the SEC, beats Florida. Clemson wins the ACC, beats Notre Dame, and Ohio State runs the table. So you have those three teams that are in. I think Alabama would be 1, undefeated Ohio State would be 2, and then 1-loss Clemson would be 3.
Yep.
Number 4 would come down to a 1-loss Notre Dame, a 1-loss A&M, and undefeated Oregon. You could throw BYU Cincinnati in there, but I don't think that they would have a chance. You're really deciding between 1-loss Notre Dame, 1-loss A&M, and 1-loss Oregon. In that situation, I think it's Notre Dame. Because Notre Dame would have that win over Clemson, which would now be the best win of them all. Because now A&M's win over Florida, still a great win, but it's not a win over a playoff team. So that's the trump card for Notre Dame, is they would have the win over the playoff team. Now, again, like you said, if Notre Dame got blown away in the ACC title game and it wasn't even competitive, this is probably different. But assuming Notre Dame at least shows up in that game and doesn't lose by 21+, I think Notre Dame gets in. I could not in good conscience put Oregon in over Notre Dame, given the strength of Notre Dame's resume at that point, which would also include a win over North Carolina at that point. You know, potentially Boston College all of a sudden looks like a quality win. So Notre Dame would have some wins, obviously the Clemson one being the trump card, better than anything that Oregon has. And if it's me, I'm not penalizing Notre Dame for losing, if we assume it's a close one. I'm not penalizing Notre Dame for losing to Clemson when the best team that Oregon played might not even be ranked.
So I agree with you, actually. In this case, I think it is Notre Dame. And I don't know enough about TV revenue and how it all works, but I know people need to make a lot of money this year. And an Alabama-Notre Dame game sure would put some eyeballs on some television sets across America. So don't discount that. Like, everybody needs to make some dollars. The ACC should be rooting hard for Notre Dame to get in there.
No, I mean, and I think, look, my takeaway is, because we've got you in a minute are going to go with, like, the total anarchy scenario. Just when everything hits the fan, what might happen. But the takeaways that I had, just where we stand right now with the playoff. And it's funny to me, because I hear a lot of experts, they'll try and like talk about, you know, the impact of games on the playoff race. And they clearly don't really dive into what the path is for these teams. And they don't know what's going to happen. Like, a lot of people saying, oh, well, Notre Dame's win last week, you know, didn't mean anything. And like, because Clemson can still get in, which is true. But like, Notre Dame's still going to have to beat Clemson in the ACC championship. That's not true. That win last week absolutely could be the difference between Notre Dame getting in and not, as we just laid out. I mean, in those three situations, I put Notre Dame in 2 of them. In 2 of the 3 most likely outcomes for this season, I think Notre Dame makes the playoff. Now, maybe they don't. I mean, that's my opinion. But I think that they have a pretty good shot to get in now because of that win. So, huge game there. Ohio State, to me, is the only lock. Ohio State is in. I mean, there's nobody in that conference. They're like what Clemson has been in the ACC for the last few years. There's just nobody on their same plane. The next best team in the Big Ten is probably Indiana. And, you know, they're probably going to get their own next week and cancel that game, as we already mentioned. But in all seriousness, that's not going to be a competitive game. You know, all due respect to Indiana. Oregon, I think, needs Clemson to lose the ACC championship. I think they need Clemson totally out of the mix here because they don't need a one-loss Notre Dame to try to compete with as a Notre Dame being an at-large. I think they need USC to run the table so that win means as much for them as possible.
Yep.
Texas A&M, Alabama, that situation is going to get really hairy if Florida wins the SEC, which is possible. BYU, Cincinnati are just going to need mountains of help. I think they need Alabama to lose twice, which would mean like losing to Auburn in the regular season and then losing to Florida, something crazy like that, which has happened before, but doesn't seem likely. They would need Oregon, BYU or Cincinnati would need Oregon to lose and be out of the mix in the Pac-12. They would need Notre Dame to lose to North Carolina and then win the ACC, I guess, or I don't know, or I guess lose again, maybe. Two-loss A&M, they would also need them to lose again. BYU and Cincinnati are just big Auburn fans. They need Auburn to beat A&M and Alabama probably for them to feel good. And, yeah, I mean, those are the main takeaways from where we stand right now. If you're Ohio State, you're feeling good. If you're Notre Dame, you're feeling a lot better than you were a week ago, no matter what happens in the ACC championship. And I think it's going to be tough for Oregon to make it in. I think they're going to need a lot of help. But what do you have? What's your chaos? Heath Ledger walking out of the hospital with the entire college football world blowing up behind him. What's that scenario look like?
Yep, so here we go. You alluded to it. Notre Dame loses to Boston College this weekend, and then they lose again to UNC on the 21st. We'll maybe get to it a little bit more later, but I don't know that it's totally crazy they could lose to Boston College. And I think there's a real chance UNC beats them in a couple weeks. On that note, UNC then has to win out and beat Clemson in the ACC championship. So you've got a two-loss UNC team, two bad losses, beating Clemson. Ohio State loses to Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship, assuming that path still exists to happen.
Right.
But Justin Fields was out with COVID.
Okay.
Florida loses at Tennessee in a couple weeks, but then they beat Alabama in the SEC championship. Oregon goes undefeated. BYU and Cincinnati go undefeated. Oklahoma wins out and beats Iowa State in the Big 12 championship, so they're back in. So with all that, you then have a two-loss champion in the Big 12, SEC, and ACC. You have Big 10 and Pac-12 champs that only played like six games this year. And then you have BYU and Cincinnati. I have no idea what you do. I guess, and I think Wisconsin is your number one seed. I think Florida, with the win over Alabama, still gets in as like your two seed.
Yeah.
Because they are the SEC champ.
Yep. No, for sure.
Then I think Oregon's in. And then I think Ohio State, because Justin Fields was out, I think they're still in. So I go Wisconsin, Florida, Oregon, Ohio State.
Good Lord.
But Lord, like, who knows in that scenario?
All right. So all of this honestly seems plausible, except Florida losing to Tennessee. That's the one I think we went a little bit far on. Everything else, I'm with you. Honestly, even if Florida wins, let's just say Florida beats Tennessee in that, like, everything else in here, I could see happening.
It's not that wild, yeah.
Yeah, like, this honestly isn't, like, some, you know, this one in a million chance. This really feels like it could happen. I mean, Notre Dame, we'll talk about it in a couple minutes. Very trendy upset pick this weekend against Boston College. We know North Carolina can hang with anybody, so that seems very plausible. UNC also beating Clemson in the ACC championship, not likely, but you and I both agree that they have a really good chance to hang with them because they got an offense, they can score points. We've talked about that on the podcast a bunch. So I'm kind of with you on a lot of this. Man, it'd be wild. But, yeah, I mean, you'd have a Wisconsin-Ohio State rematch in a 1-4 game with Fields coming back for the, for the semis. What a world that would be. And then Florida-Oregon. Whew. Television ratings probably wouldn't be great. I don't know how big of a draw of an Ohio State-Wisconsin rematch is going to be.
No, this would be a nightmare scenario for the playoff committee.
Yeah, this is the real nightmare. The nightmare where you're choosing between Notre Dame and Alabama for the four seed is not right. A nightmare. The nightmare is when you're choosing between Cincinnati and Wisconsin to get into the or whoever. All right.
Great point.
I love that. All right. So those are your crazy scenarios. We still have a month and some change left, we think, before we really have to worry about it. But we'll keep tabs on this every single week as we get closer to the end of the season. Ross, let's move on. Let's get to it. Let's get to our weekly favorite segment, our DraftKings and our CraftKings. Ross, I'm going to get it started. My DraftKing, I'm giving a shout out to the OG. The guy who started this segment way back in the day, all the way back in September, Derek King, the true Draft King, our boy from Miami. We have to give praise where praise is due. Ross, he was phenomenal last week against NC State. 31 of 41, 430 yards, 5 touchdowns. Oh, and he had 105 yards on the ground. Brought him back from down 10 after the kicker gave the W. You're the wrestling guy. Who is the guy he did the impression the kicker did?
He did the whole the Degeneration X.
Yeah. So the kicker gives the sign over to the Miami sideline. They get shut out the rest of the game. Derek King brings them back. 54-yard touchdown pass 2.5 minutes ago. They end up winning. Derek King is. He's doing the things I thought he would do. He's a better passer maybe than I gave him credit for. But honestly, I think a lot of this is just the offense that they are in. I haven't been thoroughly impressed with some of the defenses in the ACC to this point. And Derek King's athleticism is still on display in the ACC, maybe more so than I thought it would be coming from Houston. I thought he would have a harder time running around in this conference than he did in the American, but he hasn't. He's been great. The numbers are awesome this year. He's, I think, in the mix for the ACC Offensive Player of the Year with Trevor Lawrence being out a couple of weeks. I think that you know, Javonte Williams is in this category. I think that Travis Etienne, even after a bad week last week, is in this category. I think there are a few guys that are in the mix. But I think Derek King is in the conversation for ACC Offensive Player of the Year. And if – don't look now, but there is a kind of an outside chance – that maybe Miami somehow gets back into this conversation for the ACC championship game because they only have the one loss. They're just going to need a lot of help because they have the loss to Clemson. They would need Notre Dame to lose twice, and they would have to win out. But there's an outside chance of that, and Miami is playing pretty solid football. I mean, outside of that loss to Clemson, I mean, they had a sloppy game with Virginia a couple of weeks ago, but for the most part, Miami's played really good this year, and we'll talk about them more when they, you know, in a couple minutes, talking about the Virginia Tech game. But I'm impressed with Miami. Derek King has single-handedly made Miami good again.
Quarterback play, man, you see it time and time again in college football. Like, that is the X factor. That is the difference between a program that is middling and a program that suddenly is very, very relevant. I'm with you. All right, Josh, my Draft King, you mentioned him a second ago. I have to keep shouting this guy out, Javonte Williams. Heisman candidate Javonte Williams against Duke this weekend. Just 12 carries, but turned those 12 carries into 151 yards and 3 touchdowns. Added on another 4 catches, 26 yards, and a touchdown. Josh, Javonte Williams right now leads the country in touchdowns. He also leads the country by a mile, according to Pro Football Focus, in broken tackles. The dude breaks like half of the tackles that are attempted against him. Mel Kiper now has him as his number 3 running back behind Najee Harris and Travis Etienne. Some people are starting to talk about him being even higher than that. This is a kid that only got his first scholarship offer from North Carolina because his team was playing in the state championship game in Keenan Stadium, and Larry Fedora happened to be there. It's an in-state kid, valedictorian of his high school class, and doesn't get his first legit offer until the end of his senior year because he was playing the state championship at Keenan Stadium, and now is about to be a 3-and-done, probably second-round draft pick, going to make millions of dollars in the NFL. Like, it's crazy. I mean, you look at Najee Harris, who's like the number 2 overall recruit. Etienne was a high 4-star recruit. So I guess there's just different paths to these guys being successful running backs, but it always baffles me when you have a kid that talented, that good, who's just sitting there right under your nose and you don't discover him until late. But good for him, man, because he is a stud. We'll see how they do against Wake. Wake is not a great run defense team. so he could have another big game, but it does feel like it's Michael Carter's turn to go off. So we'll see, man. All right, Josh, who's your craft king of the weekend?
De'Aaron King. I'm going back to the well. And I'm drinking a De'Aaron King's Bitch IPA, which is a real beer. The logo is apparently just the Georgia Bulldog, as I looked up, which kind of feels like copyright infringement. But this is a real beer from Township, Illinois. And I think De'Aaron King is going to go off this weekend. Virginia Tech has one of the worst explosive play defenses in the country. They give up a ton of 10-yard, 20-yard gains. I just watched Malik Willis, who was the backup at Auburn, now at Liberty, go in and, I mean, they couldn't bring him down. They could not bring the guy down for 3.5 hours on Saturday, you know, last weekend. I don't know that Tech's defense is going to wake up in time for De'Aaron King. So I think King goes off. This feels like a really bad matchup for the Hokies, who historically struggle with mobile quarterbacks. And De'Aaron King is, I mean, he's playing lights out right now, both through the air and with his legs. Like we said, 100 yards last week. Wouldn't be surprised if he has something similar this week. He'll pop off a couple of big runs. That's been Virginia Tech's, you know, game this year. Give up a lot of big plays, and De'Aaron King, that's kind of what he thrives on. He's not a dink and dunk, like move the ball, you know, with, you know, 5 and 7 yard gains. He's let's hit the home run, and I think he does that this weekend. So we're drinking De'Aaron King's Bitch IPAs.
I love that. Yeah, it feels like he's in for a huge game. That's probably a good pick. Josh, I'm not going with a specific player this weekend. My beer is the Deal with the Devil from Anchorage Brewing Company. The reason, Josh, one, the games this weekend stink. I don't want to waste any good juju on games this weekend. But two, I think it's time for us to make a deal with the devil just to save the rest of this season. I'm officially worried. I think us as college football fans and us as college football country, we need to be leading the charge to make that deal with the devil just to let the rest of this season happen. Also, given the fact that not a lot of good games, might be good to just do a little drinking this weekend. This beer, Josh, 17.3% ABV. Technically, that makes it a barley wine, not a beer. Alaska seems to have some pretty good beers. I might have to move there. But, Josh, here's my deal with the devil for you. If my chaos scenario from above plays out, I will find a way to procure this beer, and we'll do a live stream of myself drinking it. Maybe even power hour style. But I want to make sure that that's safe. But I will. That is my commitment to you. That at the very least, I will live stream myself drinking and reviewing this beer. I will find a way to get it if my chaos scenario plays out.
Yeah, that might have to be the official beer of the college football playoff. If it's Wisconsin and actually, I guess Wisconsin was the only weird team in there. But either way, yeah, that might have to happen. I don't know if you could drink more than one. 17%? What is
Like I said, it's technically a barley wine.
What is above a certain? What's like a PBR? Is it like 4, 3.5?
Four or five, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's like 4 PBRs. All right, you could have 2.
Yeah, a lot of like your classic IPAs you're going to get at a brewery are in like the 6 to 8-ish range. So it still is twice as strong as like a strong IPA from a brewery.
Might need it when you're watching Penn State Nebraska this weekend on Fox for the big news. All right. Before we get by the boat, Ross, you got a trivia question for me this week?
Josh, I do have one. We've danced around it throughout this show, and you might very well know the answer to this already. But so two parts. One, when was the last time that Notre Dame beat a number one ranked team?
Oh, man. I actually don't know if I do know this. It would have been – oh, no, I do. Florida State, 93.
That's exactly right.
Okay, yep.
Do you know what happened the next week?
Yes, I do. They lost to Boston College, and it was in Chestnut Hill. And I want to say Notre Dame missed a field goal as time expired, but I may be wrong on that part. But I know it came down to the wire.
So, yes, I actually don't know that it was in Chestnut Hill. I think the game might have been in South Bend again.
Oh, okay.
But they did, in fact, lose to Boston College. So, look, that's out there right now.
Oh, it was in South Bend.
History tends to repeat itself. They lose, or they win against number one. I mean, that Florida State-Notre Dame game in 93 apparently was, you know, billed as, like, the game of the century.
Right.
And it ended up being an awesome game. Notre Dame wins. Notre Dame's back. And then they go blow it against Boston College. So that's out there. Like you said, it's a trendy upset pick for this weekend. Boston College played tight against Clemson for a while. You really took them to the wire. Now they get a chance at Notre Dame. Can they spoil the season? Who knows? We'll see. But, yeah, nicely done. You nailed the trivia question.
There we go. First time in a while. This game was wild, man. 41-39. Boston College was up 31-17 going into the fourth quarter. Wild comeback from Notre Dame falls short. They outscored BC 22-10 in the fourth and then miss again. Here's my trivia question for you. So the game was on NBC. Who was the color analyst on that game?
Oh, my gosh. Al Michaels.
No, the color analyst, not the play-by-play.
Oh.
Who's the analyst on NBC? NBC is important.
NBC is important. Dude, I don't know. I got nothing for you.
It's Chris Collinsworth.
Oh, that was the obvious one.
You know who's going
to
be on?
I didn't want it to be a dumb guess.
You know who's going to be on the call right this weekend?
Chris Collinsworth. Jack Collinsworth.
Jack Collinsworth. So
yeah,
kind of a little generational thing here, right?
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? This game is in Chestnut Hill, so he may not be on the call because I don't think it's an NBC game. But okay. Regardless, Jack Collinsworth will be watching, and
sure
that's you never know. Coincidence? I don't
that's
think so.
Not nothing. That's not nothing.
Who was on? Okay, just because we're on the subject here, and now I'm on Wikipedia and I'm down a rabbit hole. The Florida State game, the game of the century. Who was the sideline reporter for NBC for Notre Dame, Florida State, 1993?
Dude,
come
Katie
on,
Couric.
OJ Simpson.
No
sideline reporter. I'm dead serious. It says it right here. The call for the game was Bob Costas back in the studio, Charlie Jones and Todd Christensen. Sorry, I don't know who they are. John Dockery was on one sideline, and OJ Simpson was on the other sideline calling the game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, what a game.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit of a run there. You went from OJ to Chris Collinsworth in back-to-back weeks.
Yeah,
a little bit of a change
up.
All right. Enough trivia. Let's get to By the Boat. As you mentioned, Ross, not the greatest slate of games. Poor Fox. They end up throwing Michigan State and Indiana, I think, on Big Fox because Penn State, Nebraska, which was billed as this showdown before the season, is now a matchup of winless teams. Let's start with them. Penn State, Nebraska. So Nebraska's 0-2. Penn State's 0-3. Penn State's a 3.5-point favorite on the road. Noon kick FS1. My question for you really quickly is, which of these coaches do you think needs the win more? Is it Scott Frost or James Franklin?
Oh, man. I'm going James Franklin. Penn State, like you said, was kind of billed as this – you know, potential contender this year. It's time for him to get the ship righted before that fan base starts getting really upset. Now, Scott Frost needs it also. This would certainly be a huge win for him, but I'm going James Franklin, I think, just given the expectations at Penn State.
So I'm going to give James Franklin a little bit of slack here. You're right. I mean, Penn State came in top 10 team, thought to be a challenger to Ohio State. People are getting really antsy up there because, you know, they took a step back after McSorley and Saquon Barkley left. Feels like they're, I mean, last year they were 11-2, but they're waiting for that breakthrough, right? And haven't had it yet. This season has obviously gone south very quickly. Penn State has had a lot of weird stuff go on, man. Micah Parsons opts out of the season. He was their best player by far. He played every position on defense. He's going to be a top 5 pick. They lose Journey Brown, one of their running backs, who actually recently just had to retire from football because of a heart condition. So awful story there. They've lost several of their other top running backs, either to opt-outs or to transfer. So what they thought was going to be the best running back room in America, all of a sudden now they're playing their fourth-string guy. They've dealt with a ton of adversity. They also have a bunch of new coaches on offense, so they've had a hard time kind of running this new scheme with a bunch of players in and out. I'm going to cut them a little bit of slack. They also arguably should have won the Indiana game. I mean, that game was as close as you could possibly get. Weird, fluke situation where the guy scores and he wasn't supposed to score and ends up costing him the game. So they probably should have at least one win right now. Doesn't excuse the loss to Maryland or anything, but maybe 0-3 is a little bit misleading. Also, in all seriousness, James Franklin, I don't know if you know this, his daughter has sickle cell disease. So his family is living at their house in Florida. And James Franklin is obviously staying in Pennsylvania. He's not with his family for the entire season. And this is where I think sometimes, like, there are certain fan bases who have the right to be frustrated and upset with some losses. Like, South Carolina's fan base is really upset right now. Virginia Tech's fan base is really upset right now for some reasons. I think sometimes we need to back away for a minute and just remember these guys are going through real life, you know, problems right now. And the fact that James Franklin, who this week finally admitted, talking to the media, he said, look, I'll be honest with you, like, I've not handled this very well, like being away from my family and trying to coach this football team and just all the things that have gone on at Penn State. I'm actually going to cut James Franklin some slack. I'm with you that Penn State needs the win. Like, as a program, they need the win probably more than Nebraska does. But I'm going to say that Scott Frost needs this win. They have not won a game since November 23rd of last year. And now in year three, everybody has said this, and it's true. If Scott Frost is not the guy to get it done at Nebraska, kind of hard to think of anybody who can. And think about this. You know, 3 years ago, Scott Frost turned down Florida to go to Nebraska, to go back home and try to rectify the program that he helped, I wouldn't say build, but help put the finishing touches on some national championship teams with Tom Osborne. And he turns down an SEC job that now all of a sudden Dan Mullen has in the thick of the playoff chase. Scott Frost was the most attractive candidate out there, and yet he goes to Nebraska. And now I don't know what's going to happen there. I think this is more of an indictment on Nebraska than it is Scott Frost. But this is – it's tough, and you wonder how Nebraska can survive. My thing we'll have more time to talk about this in another week, but if I'm Nebraska, Scott Frost tried to go with the spread option, you know, Oregon, what he was running at UCF kind of style offense with Taylor Martinez, who has regressed in 2 years. If I'm Nebraska, I model my program after Wisconsin. I'd say, look, I'm in the middle of the Midwest. I just want to get big country boys in here to build a great, big, beefy offensive line. We're going to run the ball 45 times a game, and that's how we're going to try to win.
Wisconsin.
Yeah. Why would you try to be Oregon when you're in Nebraska? You're not recruiting California. You're not recruiting Florida. You're not recruiting the states with all the speed. You're in the middle of the Midwest. You're in the big country. Like, go out to the farms. Go get, you know, 340-pound hog mollies. Build a great offensive line. Wisconsin has done that. Ross, Wisconsin's one of the 12 best programs in America over the last 15 years.
Yep.
And they've done it without recruiting a ton of speed. Like, get a really good running back, get a great offensive line, and that's all you need. And they've succeeded that way, especially in that division. You're not playing against elite teams in that division besides Wisconsin. So that's where I would model it after. I think Scott Frost, I mean, I get it. That's where he, you know, made his chops as a coach, was at Oregon under Chip Kelly and then, you know, running that spread offense at UCF. But I just don't think that's the way to win at Nebraska. I think you have to go the other direction. So that's what I would do. No. But as far as this game on Saturday, my pick in it, I'm actually going to go Nebraska, because I think Penn State, with dealing with all of that adversity outside that just doesn't have anything to do with football, I think they're reeling a little bit. I'm going to take the Huskers in this game. The question for Nebraska would be, what's the deal at quarterback? Adrian Martinez was benched last week. He's going to start this week. Some people feel like this might be his last chance to keep the job before they turn it over to Luke McCaffrey, Zach Wilson's younger brother. So we're gonna go with Nebraska here in a last-ditch attempt. But this feels tough to me. But there's hardly any games to pick. So I'll back Nebraska here with the points in a game that it feels like a toss-up. All right, Ross, Notre Dame-Boston College. Let's talk about this one. What are your thoughts on Notre Dame? They're a 13.5-point favorite on the road. We all know this is a popular upset pick this week, or if not an upset, a game that they feel like Boston College can cover. The last time most people saw Boston College, they had a 15-point lead on Clemson at halftime.
Yeah, it makes me nervous only because everybody's talking about it now. And when too many people start talking about it, it's like, you know, Notre Dame knows that they need to be on high alert. Like, can it still be a letdown spot if you know going into it, like, that it's that obvious of a letdown spot? So that's the only thing that makes me nervous. I love the storylines, though. Our guy, Phil Dracovic, Ian Pulitzer. I like Ian Pulitzer in this spot to stick it to his old team that didn't give him playing time, stick it to Ian Book, who stuck around when he wasn't supposed to. But, man, as much as I personally really want Boston College to win, I'm concerned that it's too obvious of a spot for Boston College to win and Notre Dame's going to come out and just win comfortably.
Me too. I completely agree. And while everybody probably remembers the last thing they saw of Boston College, oh, this is the team that had Clemson on the ropes. They were up 28-13, and you know they lost in the last quarter, and they should have beaten Clemson. This team is sneaky. Did anybody watch them squeak by Syracuse last week? Because Syracuse is awful. And Boston College went up on the road. Classic letdown spot for them. And barely avoided catastrophe against the Orange. Now, Jeff Hafley is a heck of a coach. And I think he's going to empty whatever kitchen sink he can at Notre Dame on Saturday. This game means everything for them. I mean, this is their national championship. They play Louisville and Virginia to end the season. But, you know, this is it for them. Notre Dame is the biggest game left on their schedule. It's the red bandana game, which is honoring Wells Crowther. Obviously, most people at this point know that story. Such a remarkable story. So important to BC. So they're going to be fired up to wear the red bandana jerseys, which are really cool. Like, if you see them, they've got red bandana all over the numbers and the letters and stuff. Very cool. But I'm with you. Way too obvious of a spot. I think Notre Dame wins, and I think they cover the number. I cannot go. When 90% of the public, it feels like, is on the underdog, there's no chance I'm backing the underdog. That's the only reason. Yeah. Otherwise, this feels like a spot where BC could hang around. But BC has been a little bit up and down at points this season. They did everything they could in that Clemson game. And, yes, they were ahead. But as we all know, some fluky stuff happened in that game to keep them around. Syracuse was close. They beat a horrible Georgia Tech team the week before. They lost to Virginia Tech by 26 back in the middle of October. And Virginia Tech is not as good as we thought they were. They're fine, but losing by 26 to them, not great. Boston College has played better outside of Virginia Tech against the better teams that they've faced this season. So maybe they get up for this one, but I cannot back an underdog that's that trendy. I can't do it. So I'm going to take Notre Dame minus 13.5. The last game I have, Ross, is Miami-Virginia Tech. I think you're throwing this in your teaser, too. What are your thoughts here? Virginia Tech, unranked Virginia Tech, now a 2-point favorite at home against number 9 Miami. The total is 67. The game is at noon on ESPN2.
Look, so if they're favored by 2. They should be back at full strength, I think. Khalil Herbert hopefully should be back. James Mitchell should be back. But still, like you said earlier, how is Virginia Tech going to get stops? Like, if you're betting on this game, you were betting on Virginia Tech, like, forcing a turnover or two and winning this game, like, 42-41. Like, that's really what it is. Maybe Miami misses another key extra point or something like that in an absolute slugfest. I don't see them getting many stops. The line just doesn't make a ton of sense. It certainly seems like Miami plus 2 is the obvious pick. And like you said, this is the first game of my teaser, is teasing Miami to plus 9. But the line's so close. Like, man, maybe some people smarter than us or richer than us know something that we don't.
Yeah, it's tough because you have to think they're not going to play as poorly as they did last week, especially if they get Herbert and Mitchell back.
Nope.
They're 13th in the conference in 10-plus yard plays allowed. They give up a ton of those. I wouldn't even call 10-yard gains explosive plays, just chunk plays. They give those up. And that's where it feels like Miami can take advantage. They've got a dynamic, explosive quarterback. We talked about that a few minutes ago. It feels like the type of game where Derek King's going to go off. And if that's the case, I just don't know that I can see Virginia Tech keeping up in this one. But I was surprised to see that Miami is only – 9th in the conference in 10-plus yard plays on offense. They're not as explosive as maybe I would have thought, you know, the eye test would have told me. So maybe Virginia Tech has a bit more of a chance in this one. We saw it. Look, Miami's defense last week was horrific against a bad NC State offense led by, Hockman. Hockman goes in there and lights them up for 41 points. Maybe this one does turn into a shootout. My big thought on this one, and we didn't talk about this on last pod with Virginia Tech, is I just think they need to throw the ball more. They have a great running game. I mean, if Khalil Herbert is healthy, it's one of the best rushing attacks in America. I love it. I love watching Hendon Hooker and Herbert, and they're trying to figure out how to use Raheem Blackshear a little bit more. That's a big thing that, you know, Blackshear has even talked about wanting the football more, and he deserves it. He's a great weapon that they have. But Virginia Tech has to throw the ball more than they do. They are so predictable in their offense, where they run the ball on first down a lot. They even run it on second and long sometimes, which makes no sense. They'll run jet sweeps a lot in long distance situations. They got to trust their receivers, and they got to trust Hendon Hooker. Hendon Hooker would be third in the conference in passing efficiency if he had enough attempts to qualify. And he doesn't.
It's crazy.
He would be third in the conference behind Sam Howell and Trevor Lawrence. And the same thing was last year. He actually had a higher passer rating than Sam Howell, but he didn't have enough attempts. Now, part of it was because he didn't start the first half of the year, but he didn't have enough attempts to qualify for the award. So he can throw the ball. He is a very effective, efficient passer. Other than the weight game, he was horrible in the weight game. I get it. That game was an anomaly. Every other game that Hooker has played, he takes care of the football, he moves the chains, he gets it to the right guy. Virginia Tech is dead last in the conference in passing attempts per game. 22.5. Notre Dame is the next closest at 27.5. Virginia Tech throws the ball 5 times fewer per game than the next closest team in the conference. And as good as your rushing attack is, when you start playing against teams like Miami who have athletes who can probably load the box on you and they're probably not going to let you dominate them on the ground, I don't know that that's going to work. It works against Duke. It works against NC State. I don't think it works against Miami. I think Virginia Tech has to let Hooker let Hooker cook a little bit more than
let Hooker.
let Hook cook.
So Josh, I agree with you. My only counter to the efficiency versus volume kind of thing there is a lot of the throws that the offense is designed for him to make are very high percentage throws. Or like they're so good at leaking a tight end out of the backfield or across the line of scrimmage, that kind of thing. So I think those things are related in some way where he doesn't throw it a lot. And when he does, a lot of times it is to a wide open receiver. Like, I don't know that if he is being asked to pick a defense apart and, you know, throw the ball in the tight windows throughout a whole game that we would see that same level of efficiency. I think he benefits from admittedly very good play calling that you run, and then you catch a defense off guard with these passes and how they do it. So those things are related a little bit. That being said, I agree with you. I think he's a very good player and like to see him throw it more. So that's the first game of my teaser as well. Miami +2 to +9. I think Tech absolutely could win, but I don't think they can win by more than a possession because I think Miami's going to score so much. My next game, NC State -9.5 to -2.5. And that line might be larger now. Just keep an eye on it against Florida State. So Florida State just lost Marvin Wilson, Tamorian Terry, who'd been out for a little bit anyway. Their best offensive lineman, James Blackman, Wilson, and the offensive linemen are the only ones that really matter. But sheesh, man, like, they stink. I don't know how North Carolina lost to this Florida State team. NC State has been respectable a few times. Like you said, they almost beat Miami, probably should have beat Miami. Getting them down to -2.5 against a bad Florida State team seems like a lock. So I would go ahead and lock that one in. Also, as we know, 7-10 is our teaser zone. We got out of our comfort zone last week, but we're back in it. Number three, UCF -24, which we talked about earlier this week. Was it like 18 or 18.5 on Tuesday? It's already up to 24. I told you that line was too small. We're going to tease them back down to 17 against Temple. Really wish we'd teased it when it was at 17, getting it down to 10. Now it's still in the squirrely zone. But at this point, I've talked about it so much, I'm committed. So we're going with UCF back down to 17 against Temple. I think they blow Temple out. And then we're going to make this a tradition, the Friday night special. The other game we talked about in that same vein was Cincinnati -27.5. We're going to tease them to 20.5 against ECU. ECU's bad. They're 1-5. They've lost by 20-plus twice, 17-plus 3 times already, and Cincinnati knows they have to keep winning big every week if they have these playoff aspirations, like we've talked about. So Cincy rolls easily 3 or 4 touchdowns. Love getting Cincy down under 21-point threshold.
I'm a big fan of the style points teasers.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, you got to keep that kind of stuff into account, and we're far enough into the season now where teams know what's at stake in these situations, and Cincy is going to be less likely to let a backdoor cover hurt them when they know they need to win by a lot. So I like that one.
All right, there you go. So those are your teaser picks. My by the boat, I've got Miami +2. I didn't even give a pick, by the way. Miami +2. I'm taking Miami. It's too tempting. I know the line's weird. We've been losing on stinky lines for the last few weeks. I'm getting suckered right back into it again. I'm taking Miami +2 points. I'm taking Nebraska +3.5. Notre Dame -13.5. You've got NC State -2.5, UCF -17, Miami +9, and then Cincinnati down to -20.5. A lot of American picks for you this week. A little AAC action.
Supporting the troops, Josh, on this Veterans Week. Of course I have to support the troops of the American Conference.
And you know what? For good measure, let's throw it in there. Our boys, Coastal Carolina, the Shants on the road, down in Troy. at Veterans Memorial Stadium. You know, they're going to disrespect the troops this weekend. They're going to take down the Troy Trojans. 11-point number. We're back in the shots again. Coastal Carolina minus 11. That feels like a really low number, man, the way Coastal's playing.
It does feel like a low number. Yeah. Go ahead, and if you want to support Coastal, go ahead and toss them into the teaser as well, because I actually really like them at minus 4.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, cool. That's going to do it for us. Ross, we are out for this week. Cannot wait. We got a big announcement coming up on Monday's podcast. So appreciate you guys for listening. Stay tuned Monday. We've got a very cool a special announcement about what's next for the show, and we cannot wait to share it with you. So make sure you guys listen on Monday for that and enjoy. You know what? It's week one again, Ross. Season starts now.
We're back. Why not? Sure.
Let's do it. All right, Ross. We'll see you on Monday.
Okay, see ya.